Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a board member for Pardes. Please tell your friends about this podcast series. Our listenership continues to grow through your help. Remember that you don't need an iPod to listen. Any computer with speakers will do, and any brand of MP3 player. Please also take a moment to rate our podcast in iTunes. From the iTunes podcast tab, click the arrow next to the Pardes from Jerusalem podcast line on the screen. You'll then see the iTunes homepage for the podcast. Add your review by clicking on the Write a Review link on the right-hand side of the page. You may need to scroll down to see that link. Thanks for your help and time on this. In this year, Rabbi Schweiger discusses the Torah portion Akev. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as the Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
This week's parsha is Parshat Akev. In the last two parshiot, I spoke about the role of God in enabling us to, on the one hand, conquer our enemies, the initial conquest of the land, which is Parshat Dvarim. And in last week's parsha, we spoke about what needs to be done in order to inherit the land, to hand the land down from generation to generation. In last week's parsha, the emphasis was placed on fear of God. Fear of God can be something which is empowering. By fearing God, I am not afraid of my enemies. It can enable me to conquer my enemies, which is Parshat Dvarim. But fear of God also places within me a sense of humility. A sense of humility, which also makes me aware of my responsibility, my accountability. And it's that fear of God which guarantees that I will not forfeit the land through my sin. Parshat Akev builds on that. And in Parshat Akev, we are concerned with the contractual relationship between God and the Jewish people. The Parshat begins in chapter 7, verse 12, by saying, if we will listen to the laws, observe and do them, then God will observe to us the covenant and the kindness which he swore to our forefathers. And then it goes on to describe all the things which God will do for us. God will love us. God will bless us. God will increase us. God will bless the fruits of our womb. God will bless the fruits of our land. God will see to it that we are blessed from among all the nations. God will remove all types of illnesses. A very straightforward contractual relationship. We need to observe the commandments, and in return, God will give us all these blessings. This contractual relationship is taken one step forward, further, in chapter 11, verse 13, in a section which is very familiar to us, as the second paragraph of the Shema. And there, the contractual relationship between God and the Jewish people is very much reflected through the land. So that it says, if you will surely listen to my commandments, to love God, to serve God with all your heart, with all your soul, Then I will bring the rain in its proper time, and you will gather your grains and your wine and your oil. And I will give you grass in the fields for your animals, and you will eat, and you will be satisfied. But beware, lest your hearts go astray. You worship idols. Then God will be angry. God will withhold the rain, and God will cause you to perish from the good land that he has given you. The focus of our parsha is the land of Israel, the contractual relationship that we have with God in the land of Israel. If we want to remain in the land of Israel, we have to do the commandments. But the Torah is not just giving us the warning, you will perish from the good land. The Torah begins by giving us all the benefits, all the blessings we will get. And as I mentioned a moment ago, this is the idea of a contract. There are the pros and the cons, the benefits and the costs. What do we gain? What do we stand to lose? Our parsha wants to very much highlight what we stand to gain. Let me go a few verses earlier in chapter 11. When the Torah describes the difference or differences between the land of Egypt and the land of Israel. In chapter 11, verse 10, it says, "You should know the land that you are taking possession of is not like the land of Egypt, which you left. In the land of Egypt, you planted your seeds. You watered with your feet the land like a green garden. But the land which you are taking possession of is a land of hills and valleys. You will drink water from the rain of the heavens. It is a land which God seeks. Always the eyes of God are upon this land." What are the differences between the land of Egypt and the land of Israel? The water source of the land of Egypt is the Nile. The way that the land is watered is through irrigation canals, with your feet. What's grown in the land of Egypt are seeds, green gardens. In chapter 11, in the book of Numbers, when the Jews are recalling, nostalgically, all the things which they had in the land of Egypt, in chapter 11, verse 5, they recall the fish which they had. They recall the cucumbers, the watermelons, the leeks, the onions, the garlic. The land of Egypt is a green garden. It is abundant in vegetation, in vegetables, in things that grow as a result of the planting of seeds. But the land of Israel is completely dependent upon rainfall. What grows in the land of Israel? In our parsha, in chapter 8, verse 8, we're told of the seven species that are the pride of the land of Israel. Wheat, barley, grapes, figs, pomegranates, olives, and dates. What characterizes the produce of the land of Israel are trees, fruits. Let me start with the second part. The difference between vegetables and fruits is that vegetables have to be planted every year. You plant them, they grow, and when you harvest them, there's nothing left of the vegetable patch. And if there's anything left, it's plowed under and you start again from scratch. On a conceptual level, vegetables reflect a transient reality, what we would call the here and now. Fruits, on the other hand, come from trees. Trees which have roots. Trees which have a trunk. Trees, because of the roots in the trunk, are not replanted year in, year out. You plant it once. But year in and year out, you benefit from the fruits that grow. Trees have a past, and trees also have a future. And the present is just the interface between the two. Trees are rooted in the ground, but their branches go up to the heavens. And therefore, trees, rather than reflecting a reality which is fleeting, the here and now, trees reflect a reality of continuity, of a past and a future. Not only that, but later on in the book of Dvarim, there is a very interesting verse which speaks about not wantonly destroying when we're involved in warfare. This is chapter 20, verse 19. And in the course of describing how you shouldn't just destroy, it says, Ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh. There's a very interesting analogy which is drawn between a person and the tree of the field. People are like trees. People have roots. People have a past and they have a future. People are rooted in the earth but aspire to the heavens. Which means that the natural environment of the land of Israel highlights a human reality, a people reality, an existential reality. And now I want to come to the second part, which is the land of Israel is completely dependent upon rainfall. It doesn't have abundant natural resources like the Nile. In chapter 2 in Bereishit, in what's known as the second creation story, there is a very interesting verse, verse 5, which says, and there is no growth in the fields yet. There is no vegetation in the fields yet, because God had not yet brought the rain on the land, on the earth. There is not a man to serve the earth. And the rabbis understand that verse to be saying, things are not growing because you need to have rain. But in order to have rain, you need to have people who appreciate the need for rain. And because they appreciate it, they pray for it. If the land of Israel is a place which is completely dependent upon rainfall, then the land of Israel, by its very nature, is an environment that encourages prayer, that encourages through prayer a spiritual connection with God. The place to pray, the natural place to pray, is not in the Beit Knesset, in the synagogue. The natural place of prayer is out in the fields. A model of this we find by Isaac in Bereshit, in chapter 24, verse 63. It says, and Isaac went out to the field to meditate. Lasuach. The rabbis understand Lasuach as prayer. And on that basis, they say Isaac instituted the afternoon prayer because it says he went out towards evening. The same Isaac who is praying in the field, in chapter 26, verse 12, plants in the field and produces a hundredfold. Why? It says, God blessed him. Why is the field the natural place to pray? Because in the field, prayer is a dialogue. I pray, and then I see the response to my prayer. When the rains come, when the produce comes. When I pray in the Beit Knesset, very often it's a monologue. I don't get the instant feedback, or not so instant feedback. Which therefore means the land of Israel, by its very constitution, is a place that highlights our relationship with God. It's a place that invites that relationship through prayer, through action. Nachmanides, in a number of places in his commentary, highlights this point by saying, in the land of Israel, we have a direct connection through God, to God. It's not mediated by intermediaries. Or as a noted Israeli politician once said, in Israel, it's a local call. This is the nature of the contractual relationship between God and the Jewish people in the land of Israel. It is an intimate relationship which is mediated through the land. On the land we pray, and on the land we get the feedback. It's a very intense relationship. I want to go back to chapter 8. We spoke about chapter 8, verse 8, which speaks about the praise of the land of Israel in terms of the produce we have. But earlier in chapter 8, we're told to remember, in verse 2, our experiences in the desert. And specifically, we're told to remember, in verse 3, how God fed us the manna in order to impress upon us that man does not live by bread alone. Man lives by that which God provides him with. It is very important for us to recognize that God is the source of our livelihood. In verse 3 in chapter 8, it begins by saying, I afflicted you, I pained you. There is pain when a person realizes he is not in total control of his reality. People would like to feel that they can control their environment. To be dependent and to realize how dependent you are is very painful. But God wanted that awareness to be impressed on our collective psyche. In chapter 8, verse 10, God says, "You will eat and you will be satisfied, and you will bless the Lord your God for the good land which I am giving you." And then God says, "Beware, don't forget God." And in verse 12, "Lest you eat and be full and build houses and settle in, become extremely successful and affluent. And then your heart becomes uplifted and you forget the Lord your God." And in verse 17, "And you say in your heart, it is my strength and the power of my hand that have made to me this fortune." The Torah is very concerned with the danger that people will get caught up with their success, that people will forget their dependence upon God. And therefore, the Torah says in verse 10, "When you eat and you're full, bless God. Bless God not only for the food, bless God for the good land that He has given you. Remember what a remarkable gift you have. Remember the land, not only the food. God has given you the mechanism to be able to have that food forever." Very often I joke with my children to make sure that they pronounce the third word in this verse properly. It says, "Uveirachta," and "you will bless." If you mispronounce it, you can say, "Uvarachta," you will run away. It is a natural tendency in small children that when you eat and you're full, that afterwards you've been gratified, so you just go your way, you run away. As we mature, become more civil, we learn how to say thank you, to express our gratitude. The rabbis understood this verse as being the source for the Torah commandment of Birkat HaMazon, that any time we have a meal which is focused on bread, we should express our gratitude to God. At every meal, it is critical to remember how much we are dependent upon God, but also how thankful we are to God for everything that we have. This is a central theme of the parsha. The contractual relationship with God is to be actualized in the day-to-day, in the prosaic. In last week's parsha, the focus was the revelation at Sinai, an earth-shattering event with unbelievable ramifications that was supposed to impress upon the people this awe of God. In our parsha, we speak about a different relationship with God, a relationship of love, of gratitude, a sense of indebtedness, and a sense of indebtedness that comes about through the day-to-day. This was the purpose of the man in the desert. The manna was meant to be the complement to the revelation at Sinai. It's not enough to just have earth-shattering events to shape our consciousness. The ultimate expression of who we are is to be reflected in the most prosaic day-to-day activities. If I go back to the beginning of the parasha, the very first verse, V'haya Ekev Tishma'un. Earlier, I didn't translate the word Ekev. Rashi quotes a rabbinic comment which says Ekev is related to the word Akev, which means heel, H-E-E-L. And what is this referring to? The mitzvot that people tend to trample. What God is saying is, the contractual relationship is to be realized not just in performing the big mitzvot, the lofty principles. God is looking for a contractual relationship that will be realized in the prosaic, mundane, simple things which people have a tendency to trample over because they take it too much for granted. When we look at who we are, it's not enough to just say we're basically good people. How good we are is reflected in all of the details of what we do. By and large, we're not people who go and rob. But how many of us can say that we don't cheat every once in a while? How many of us can say that we don't rationalize various things that we do? How many of us can say, well, but other people do it also, so it's really not so bad? This is where true fear of God is reflected. True fear of God is reflected in the little things. This is what the Torah is expecting of us. This is what the Torah wants of us in terms of being able to remain in the land. In the middle of our parsha, this is chapter 10, verse 12. Moses says to the Jewish people, Va'ata Yisrael, and now Israel, Ma Hashem Elokecha Sho'el Me'imach. What does God ask of you? Ki im li'yir'at Hashem Elokecha. All that he's asking is that you fear God. There's a very interesting rabbinic drash, exposition of the word ma. When Moses says, what is God asking? The rabbis say, what? And they make a play on words. Instead of the word ma, they say me'a, which means 100. What does God ask of you? 100. 100 blessings. And there is a rabbinic concept of a person making 100 blessings every day. On the one hand, one could say, big deal, so you made 100 blessings. What good have you done for the world by doing that? The point of 100 blessings is to be conscious in every single facet of what we do, how much we are dependent upon, and how grateful we are to God for all that we have. Someone who realizes how much he's indebted to God will then also appreciate the responsibility that that demands, the accountability. Somebody who realizes that whatever they have is from God will then also appreciate how much they should share that with others. The person who is caught up with themselves, who says, Kochi va'otzem yadi, asali et achayel hazeh, ultimately is someone who makes no room for others. And that will not only be by not giving and sharing, but it may also be reflected eventually by abusing. Our parsha is trying to tell us what an unbelievable gift God gave us by giving us the land of Israel. What an unbelievable opportunity God gives us in terms of all the blessings that the land has to offer. But it's important for us to be able to appreciate that. Sometimes we who live in the land of Israel forget what an unbelievable gift it is. Perhaps more often, people in the diaspora forget it. In these times, when we are under siege now, waging a very difficult war against a very vicious enemy, we can recall another period, the period of the Holocaust, when we also were in the middle of a war, faced by a very vicious, horrific enemy. The difference is, in that war, we were totally defenseless. In this war, we have the ability to defend ourselves. We have the ability to take control of our destiny. Our ability to take control of our destiny is not only in war, but in peace as well. May we all, whether it be the Jews in Israel or the Jews in the diaspora, appreciate what an unbelievable gift we have been given by once again coming back to the land of Israel and having a Jewish state, by never taking it for granted, and by doing everything that we can to preserve this gift. And preserving is not just in terms of money, is not just in terms of being here. Preserving it is in terms of making this truly a nation which will be a light unto the nations. By making this a place which everybody will be in awe of. That day is not far off. It is up to us to make it a reality. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send your email via podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.